Confessions of a Trainwreck. 30, flirty, and surviving.
It's easy to speak out of the way I live, but it's a 24-carat dream. No supermodel in my dirty jeans, but in my 24-inch heels.
Commandment number 170. Thou shalt remember, I've got 99 problems, and 90 of them are my anxiety manifesting in different ways. If anxiety were an Olympic sport, I'd be a gold medalist. I think too much, I think too far ahead, I think worst case scenario, and I always think that all of my thinking is annoying everybody else. But despite how outwardly anxious I may be, there's no place my anxiety is more prominent than in relationships. A fact that anybody I've ever dated ever could 1000% attest to. So in a bid to discover why I am the way I am, I called upon my girlfriend, podcast veteran, and qualified counsellor Sammy to debunk and unpack the attachment theory and attachment styles.
Cheers!
Cheers!
That was the cutest little chink ever.
It was a very cute little noise.
And again, it's like a new tradition. When I podcast with you now, we drink this famous Soda Co. pink lemonade that again, tastes like...
Not sponsored. Wannabe.
Definitely not sponsored, but again, open to the idea.
How
it tastes like the...
right now, though? Pink. Very,
yeah, in this pink room.
Yeah.
Pink ambient
cardigan,
mood.
Pink sweater.
I've got a pink sweater on. Oh, you just lit a strawberry and cream candle.
That was not intentional, but I'm here for it.
This is such a vibe. This is such a pink vibe. So, welcome back to the podcast, Sammy!
Thanks. It's been a while. I feel like this has probably been the longest time between podcasts.
Probably.
Well, the last time I was at yours, I had just finished my counselling qualifications and my placement.
Yes.
And now I'm a full-blown counsellor. Look at me go.
Oh my God. So much has changed. And we are sitting in your home that you own.
Oh my God.
Like
so much has changed.
A real adult. Like you are absolutely killing it.
I am definitely adulting.
Absolutely nailing it.
Go me.
And with that said, I'm very excited to announce this week's topic, which is something that is super duper highly requested since I spoke about it. I think it was back when I did a podcast episode with Abby Chatfield, like maybe last year. Mm-hmm. And it was a passing comment that I'd just listened to a podcast on the attachment theory. Mm-hmm. And I, to this day, still people message me about that particular episode. I referenced a podcast episode that I listened to about the attachment theory. Basically, I think it was just a fleeting comment. And I think I must have gotten about 100 messages from people asking,
really?
Can you send me that podcast? And I had assumed that everybody knew what the attachment theory was because it's something my friends and I have spoken about just in girls' conversations for years. Like, I didn't think it was a new topic.
And you read
Attach,
right? The book, yeah.
Yeah, people are so, so interested in that topic. And I thought that given that you are now a completely qualified counsellor and you said earlier that this is something that does come up quite a bit when you are with clients, I thought, let's chat about attachment theory.
Perfect. Okay, hold on. I'm just going to envision. I'm putting my counsellor hat on. All right, I'm prepared. I feel like I'm always just so like myself on here and now I'm like, okay, maybe I need to be a little...
No, still be yourself. It's still just two girlfriends chatting because I want to basically talk about our experiences because my question to you, and this is before I think I even had the idea to do this particular topic episode, was can people's attachment styles change over time because of like relationships and breakups and it could get better or it could get worse, for example. And you said, yes, it's actually very common for people's attachment styles to change as your life kind of changes.
Yeah. It's kind of controversial though, because some people don't believe that you can. Like there have been some studies that kind of point more towards, no, like you're kind of always in that one particular direction, which I guess... Essentially, you're most likely to stay in that one direction. Like, you're not likely to go all the way from totally avoidant to totally anxiously attached. But it's very common to be able to build a more secure attachment. Like, that's obviously the goal. So,
because that was my question to you. So, quickly to preface it at the start, before we go back and do, like, a little bit of a deep dive into, like, breaking down what each one is just for people listening at home. I said to you that I have always had a very anxious avoidant attachment style. Always, my whole life, traces back to childhood, which we will get to a little bit later on. But I said to you recently, I think my attachment style has changed, not to completely secure, but I am in a very happy, secure relationship. But I do notice that when we fight, I am straight back to anxious avoidant. And so there are certain triggers for me where I still react or behave in a very anxious avoidant way, despite being in a very happy, secure relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I guess because, I mean, the whole theory does really link things back to early childhood where your brain is still forming.
Yeah.
So a lot of the ways that you perceive those certain interactions are literally just wired into you. So you're always potentially going to see things from that light, if that makes sense. But yeah, people definitely can become more securely attached over time, or if they're slightly avoidant, for example, but then they're with someone who makes them more avoidant for particular reasons, it's like you can kind of, the severity of that can really shift.
Yeah.
Because for myself, I have pretty textbook background in terms of what would normally lead to an anxiously attached person. And I would say, like, in my previous relationships, that really showed up quite a lot. I took my time. I really worked on myself. I was with someone who was very securely attached for the most part. And so a lot of those tendencies didn't really pop up for me anymore. And I had I was in a relationship that I didn't feel as threatened and triggered. So things were really good. And then I was in another relationship where that person was very avoidant and very triggering as well to a lot of my previous traumas that made me this way.
Yeah.
And so it kind of swung me back in that direction. Yeah. So I'm like, clawing my way back now. I'm really working on that. But yeah, like, it's one of those things that it can definitely fluctuate. But like, yeah, you wouldn't really swing all the way from one to the other. No. And in terms of, I guess, you would always kind of have those similar traits no matter what the relationships are in terms of with your friendships and things like that. So
that was something I wanted to go into as well, because you said earlier that every kind of attachment style has little qualities that show up not just in romantic relationships and attachments, but in like your work and in your friendship groups, which is something that I did not know.
Really?
So I'm really excited to hear that. Yes.
Well, it's just basic human interaction. It's not specific. I mean, look, it traditionally is most obvious in romantic partnerships because that's just, you know, very close bond.
Yep.
And that's kind of one of those direct replacements from like early childhood caregivers. It's like you're one main person in your life a lot of the time. But, you know, you would often display similar traits just in any kind of interaction with any other person. It's also about how you regulate your emotions and deal with certain stresses, how you communicate things. There's like so many ways it can show up in life. It's actually so wild. And when you learn more about not just what type you are and how that shows up, but like why, it can really help you kind of trace back more to like a secure attachment, even just in yourself, not even in relationships. Like if you're single, it's not like you can't do this if you're not in a relationship. Yeah. It's about being more secure in yourself, learning how to process those emotions, be able to express your needs and set boundaries and stuff in relationships in future. So then you're already set up and ready to go.
And also I feel like because it's not something I knew about from the get-go, and so I had a lot of questions to myself, kind of about like, this is obviously prior to being with Damon, but like, why am I always attracting this same certain type of person who is so bad for me and is making, who's playing into all my insecurities and making it worse? But it was like a cycle and it was like a pattern. And then when I found out about the attachment theory, I was like, oh my God, with my childhood in mind, that makes complete sense as to why for me that was normal behavior from a male in my life.
Yeah, it's often an expected thing, or it's a confirmation bias thing in, so for example, anxiously attached people, we'll break down exactly what they are. If you're listening to us right now, you're like, I don't know what you're talking about, we'll get to it.
We're just so damn excited.
I know, my sister's like, I could talk about this for days. But if you're anxiously attached, for example, and you really like crave intimacy and consistency, for example, and that's what you didn't have, I guess, earlier in childhood, you will always crave that for a partner. And sometimes you can really likely end up with an avoidant partner who makes you chase that intimacy, doesn't give you the like security and consistency that
which
you need,
can make it worse.
But it's reinforcing previous patterns and it's like keeping you, I don't know, in that same headspace of like, I need to be the one to chase all the time because that's just like an established pattern for you.
Yeah.
So sometimes like people on total opposite ends can really attract. It's actually pretty common to be paired that way. And yep. It's not a good pairing.
No. Okay. So let's like just rewind for a minute and take it back to, let's just like quickly in a nutshell, not too deep dive, mm-hmm. but take it back to what the three main attachment styles mm-hmm. actually are.
Mm-hmm.
So the ones I know about,
yep.
secure, anxious, and avoidant, but then mm-hmm. is there a fourth that's anxious avoidant?
The fourth is disorganized or fearful avoidant, and it's kind of a little bit of the worst traits of both of those.
Oh, great.
Yeah, it's a less frequent ones, probably okay. maybe 5% of the population. It's more extreme cases, people that likely would have things like PTSD,
yeah, right.
really significant trauma, really massive difficulties in regulating their emotions or even recognizing emotions. So, all right, well, we'll briefly start with that one. So disorganized / fearful avoidant. We're not going to talk about it much because it's not one of the predominant ones. But yeah, it's generally is linked more to trauma, and they just deal with things in really unhealthy coping mechanisms because they don't know what they're feeling or how to deal with it. So they're also really more likely to have like drug and alcohol issues as well. Just awful coping mechanisms. Definitely need therapy.
Yeah.
Feel awful for people that are experiencing that, but there's pretty clear cut reasons as to why people are like that when they have like massive abandonment issues
yeah.
from early childhood, or their parents were extremely violent, for example, and they were like fearful around the home, but then the parents would apologize and say, I'm so sorry. So they're like, okay, can I trust you, or do I need to be scared of you?
Yeah.
Bouncing around like the foster system, stuff like that. So not great childhoods a lot of the time. That's kind of why people become that sort of disorganized, fearful avoidant.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess the three main ones, I like to think of it like a spectrum.
Okay.
So secure is in the middle. That's like your couple goals kind of person, pretty confident for the most part, willing to ask for support when they need it, pretty in touch with their emotions, happy to give support.
And that's like majority of the population.
About 50% roughly okay. is what's estimated. I feel like it's maybe a little less, or at least people maybe are not like 100%
secure. Like I'm going to go there and say it. I do not, and I have a lot of friends who are couple goals, but I can probably quite confidently say I don't know any girlfriends who would say I am a secure, yeah. 100% secure attachment
yeah.
type.
Yeah, that's how I feel. That's why I see it as a spectrum. It's like, okay, the goal is to be as close to the middle to secure as possible. And then on either side, you have avoidant. It's mm-hmm. sometimes called anxious avoidant or dismissive. But okay. we'll call it avoidant for this purpose so we don't have yeah. to say too many words. And the avoidant person is less likely to be affectionate or open to like deeper intimacy. They really hold back. They don't deal well with conflict. Big brick wall if there's a drama. If someone's crying in front of them, they just shut down or like totally avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're less likely to be in like long-term relationships sometimes. They just kind of prefer to do their own thing. Don't trust that their needs going to be met. I'll yep. explain why in a minute. And then on the other end of the spectrum is the anxiously attached. So sometimes that's called preoccupied / ambivalent. We'll call it anxiously attached. And they're the people that are, I guess, often more seen as like needy, clingy, like super into intimacy, always chasing people.
Almost like validation.
Yeah, almost like validation. Generally do struggle with like self-worth and confidence and need someone else to kind of reassure them.
Yeah.
Gosh, how else does that show up? I feel like I should be able to rattle this off because this was very much me. But yeah, like a lot of the time they have really strong needs, but don't feel comfortable expressing them because they don't want to come across as needy, especially if they're paired with an avoidant partner.
Yes.
So they really hold it in. So they're much more likely to not set and enforce boundaries and yep. end up being a total doormat, like losing themselves in a relationship in particular, because they just kind of go with what the other person wants to do because they don't want to rock the boat. They are like constantly walking on eggshells. Like, I don't want this person to leave me.
Yeah. 100%. Okay. That makes sense. So what then is it that stems from people's childhoods that make them either secure? Like the podcast I listened to basically went into, if you are, for example, born into a family that has like a mum and dad who are still together, mm-hmm. or, you know, your parents, whatever your family structure looks like, your parents are still together. You grow up in, you know, a fairly traditional family, I mm-hmm. suppose, where both of your parents are always there with you.
Yeah.
You kind of, that's your norm.
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah, so that would probably be more towards the secure. So it doesn't necessarily have to be that both parents are together. Originally, attachment theory was more about the primary caregiver. I think this was like way back in like 1930 or something was when they sort of started this theory and did the studies. And so at the time, it was very much just mum a lot of the time. Now, you know, a lot of the time, parents are pretty equal caregivers. It still is the one that you spend most time with in those very first few kind of most formative years. But it can kind of be either. So, yeah, secure people would be generally comforted. Like if they were crying, they were, you know, comforted, soothed. They knew their parents were there, but also like not super helicopter parents. So sort of throughout childhood, more so than like baby life, like they'd be cool if the kid was playing on the playground, let them explore, give them a little bit of independence, and the kid wouldn't be stressed about it because they know if anything happens, I know mom and dad are there. I can see them, but I also feel comfortable kind of playing and doing my own thing.
Okay.
So like they knew I can express my needs will be met. I'm not going to be left on my own. And then, yeah, when we think about like avoidant, they would typically, not always, but typically be, the parents would maybe be less present. So either physically not there as much or emotionally not very supportive. So maybe they were left to cry it out for really long periods of time, or when they were, you know, 3, 4, 5 years old, told to stop crying, suck it up, stop being a big baby, all of those things that were not very emotionally supportive. So they learnt, if I express these needs, my needs are not going to be met. No one's going to come and help me. So I'm just going to figure out what to do on my own and not really trust in anyone.
Yeah.
So that's where that whole kind of trust thing comes from in relationships later in life. It's like,
which you don't know until you're in one, and then it's fucked.
Yeah, and then it's just like, I don't trust anyone. Like, what's the point of even telling you what I need? Like, yeah. I'm good on my own.
You're going to leave me anyway.
Yeah,
what's the point?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just creates like a big lone wolf kind of situation because they just didn't have that constant support earlier in life a lot of the time. Anxious is more about inconsistency.
Yeah.
So it's either that sometimes the parents were there and really supportive and other times maybe they were absent or didn't comfort them, or it could be that one parent was really, really comforting and great and there for them and the other parent was not. Either they were always traveling or, you know, instances of like family violence and things like that. If they had one great parent that would check on them and the other parent was like off doing crazy things.
Yeah.
So it's like this whole walking on eggshell situation. I don't know what I'm going to get. If I try and express a need, am I going to get comforted? Am I going to be left on my own? If I knock something over, am I going to get in trouble from my dad that's really mad? Or is my mom going to be like, cool, don't worry, I'll clean it up.
Yeah.
So it's like this whole like tiptoeing around, not wanting to rock the boat, really being hyper-vigilant of like other people's energy. So that's why in later life, it's like, okay, anytime someone's energy is off, you're like, oh my God, do they not like me anymore?
Oh God,
are they mad?
Are
they
gonna
break up with me? You send a text to a friend that's like mildly risky and they don't reply for 2 hours. And instead of thinking, oh, they're at work, it's like, oh my God, are they going to not want to be friends with me anymore? Have
literally,
I done something wrong?
When Damon calls me Phoebe, I'm like, why are you breaking up with me? Like, I am so dramatic.
That's so funny. Well, yeah, like anxious people are seen as more dramatic and they often feel like, oh my God, I'm so needy. I'm so clingy. And it's like, they just have a need.
Yeah.
You know, they just need a little bit of extra love.
And it makes sense when you put it in context like this, because I guess you don't actually realize until, well, I didn't realize. I always used to be like, haha, daddy issues. I'm so fucked up. Like prior to reading like the attachment theory. And then you kind of, it makes so much sense that that's where your whole attachment comes from.
Yeah.
Like everything that you learn as a child is ingrained in you and it's how you're going to behave.
Yeah.
Moving. You don't know anything else. That's the thing.
Well, yeah. Like, especially because it's such a, literally the first year of your life is where most of this whole attachment thing really kicks in.
Yeah.
And it's not, I feel bad when I explain this to clients where they have a great relationship with their parents now and they're like, starting to blame them for things, and it's not about blame, and it's not usually an intentional thing a lot of the time.
No.
It's just that's
just
the
way it is.
And sometimes it's the parents' own attachment style that then they just kind of are replaying that with their kid. For example, if it's an avoidant person that is not great with their own affections, they're probably not going to be overly affectionate with the kid, so then the kid's not going to be able to express that either, and it's just like this ongoing thing.
Yeah. But they can be changed, and that's what I want to kind of talk about. So I will, I'll basically tell you, like, I think I am anxious avoidant, like I said earlier. So I did grow up, my parents did separate when I was 4 or 5, so quite young, and my mum was our primary caregiver, and fabulous mum, couldn't have asked for a better mum. She did work multiple jobs to pay for me and my sister, so physically I guess she wasn't home all the time. We went to after school care a lot, blah blah blah. Not that I think that made a difference, because she was my primary caregiver and I have a very good relationship with her, and I always have. My dad was kind of a little bit more inconsistent, I guess you could say. Like, he moved around a lot. Sometimes he wasn't living in Brisbane, sometimes he was. So wasn't as consistent in my life as my mum was. And don't want to get into it too much, obviously, but I think that I had always been very anxious. I didn't have boyfriends in high school the way a lot of other girls did. And I always was kind of not scared of men, but I'd never, like, I then had like a stepdad, I guess, but then, you know, him and my mum were together for a very long time, like 14 years. We lived with him. One day he just left, told her he didn't love her anymore. And then he was gone too. So it was kind of like, wow, like, I've not got a lot of consistency when it comes to males in my life. So I kind of grew up like, yeah, girl power. Like, it was my mum, my sister and me basically together all the time. So I never had like, I guess it's classic textbook, like the daddy issue thing. And I'm saying that with like, what's this? Bunny ears. Bunny ears. And so I think as I got older and started to like form more romantic style attachments with guys, I would always go for ones that were really emotionally unavailable and who I think were classic avoidant. Like, none of them expressed much emotion. None of them invested that much time or care.
Did you want them to, though?
Yes, but I would never show that, ever. And this is something my mum said to me one day. She said she grew up, when she started dating people, she always thought she wanted to be the cool girl. So she used to make it, she used to actively say to guys, like, I never want to get married and have kids, because she didn't want to come off looking like a desperate girl, even though all she wanted was to get married and have children. And if you want that, you should not be ashamed to go around and say that. But I think I was very much like her in that regard.
Yeah.
And I would just be cool, being that cool girl who wasn't ever like, so what are we?
Yeah.
Even though we've been dating each other for like 3 years, like, what are we? I knew that they were out there seeing other girls and doing this and doing that. And I just thought that one day that kind of behavior would stop. So I was allowing myself to be in these situations that were crushing me and feeding into my insecurities even more.
Yeah.
But I guess that was familiar to me.
Yeah.
Like, those patterns and behaviors was what I knew.
Mm-hmm.
And looking back, I guess it's kind of like, I remember when people used to say, like, you accept the love you think you deserve. And I was like, fuck off. But I kind of understand that now.
Uh-huh. I don't think you're avoidant. I think you're absolutely just anxious.
Yes.
You keep throwing the avoidant there.
No, like, I am avoidant when it comes to conflict.
Yeah,
but... And I think...
That's normal. Different.
Okay.
In the way that I imagine you do it, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that you avoid the conflict because you don't want to rock the boat and upset your other partner.
Yes.
You don't want to bring it up and make an issue because if you're paired with an avoidant person, they're either going to shut down and not talk to you and you're like, I've just raised this for nothing, or you're scared that they're going to leave you, or you're with a really strong avoidant person who is also like a gaslighting narcissist who you've raised an issue once. They've made you feel crazy. So now every time you have an issue, you think you're crazy.
Yeah.
So and so you can't don't say bring anything. Up the conflict.
Yeah.
That's not avoidant.
Okay. That's good to know. That's good to know. Because every time someone says anxious, like describes the anxious patterns and behaviors, I very much relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I am avoidant in that I hate conflict. Also, I'm a Libra. So I strive for balance. I hate conflict. I will never start a fight with someone. And I would rather, and this drives Damon insane. He knows when I'm upset or when something's bothered me or I'm angry, because I will just go mute.
Yeah.
I will just shut my mouth. I would rather say nothing, but me say nothing, he knows that I'm stewing inside, which then makes it worse because I'm not good at communicating how I feel.
Yeah.
Even though in my head I am yelling and cussing and I know what's going on in my head, but I just have a really hard time communicating it. But I guess it stems back to the reason I'm scared that if I say how I'm actually feeling out loud, he's going to leave me.
Yeah, that you'll be too much hard work and that he's not going to want to deal with you. Yeah. It's a little bit of a, I guess it can show up in that same way in terms of shutting down, but it's for different reasons.
Yeah.
That's why I was really surprised when you said you were avoidant.
Yeah,
I'm like, I don't think so.
And he knows me, and he knows me so well. He knows obviously my whole past and everything. And he is always like, I'm not going to leave you.
Yeah.
He's like, just tell me what's wrong. Yeah. Like,
but so you need to hear that too.
Exactly.
Because you've probably had so much instability and just hearing that is like, what you need.
Exactly.
And
he said, I remember, what was it? It was like the other day when I was really like, and he can see when I'm really anxious and overwhelmed and stuff. Sometimes he'll just grab me and be like, I love you.
Oh.
And it's so simple and so dumb. And if you're listening to this on the other side being like, it's like, I know. I used to be like that too, but it's just what I need to hear. It does go so far.
Well, that's the thing. Like, cause he sounds like he is more of a secure attachment and most securely attached people are not actually threatened by an anxiously attached person.
Yeah.
We think they will be.
That's, yeah.
But they're actually like, hey, okay, like maybe you got some stuff going on, but I really love you. And if I need to just give you a little bit more reassurance, like I'm cool with that.
Exactly.
And so actually being able to express that is such a game changer. And not that we should rely on our partner to fix us, but sometimes if you are lucky enough to be blessed with a partner who is securely attached and you're more anxiously attached and you have the lady balls to tell them, hey, I just need a little bit more reassurance. Like, can I let you know when I'm struggling or, you know, talk through love languages if you've got a particular one that really kind of hits for you.
We should for sure do an episode on love languages. Yeah. Oh my God.
Done. Add it to the list. We'll come back to it. But you know, like if you can actually learn to express that, which is kind of one of the hardest parts, is that they can then actually come to the party and help you with that
and
give you what you need.
It's a two-way bloody street.
Well, then eventually you're going to trust that they're there for you and you're not going to need to chase that validation as much because you're going to be like, oh, okay, I see that this is an irrational thought. Like, they're not going to leave me. I've expressed my needs before and it hasn't pushed them away like it has pushed other
people
really avoiding people away. Like, this person is going to be here for me. I can chill out because it's not inconsistent.
Exactly.
And so that's where slowly you merge towards a more secure attachment as well as working on yourself too. It's not relying all on them to fix you. Absolutely not.
Not at all. But I think it is really assuring to know that you can be in a secure relationship because there was a point there. I reckon it literally was just before I met Damon where I was like, I am not going to ever meet anyone. I just was like, I can't do this anymore. And I had gone from dud to dud to dud to dud to dud for like 10 years. And I was like, it's just not going to work out for me. Why is everyone else so lucky with these amazing partners and stuff? It must just be like, I'm too fucked up. No one's ever going to love me.
Oh, see.
And then boom, he came along.
And that's you just being hard on yourself, which is another classic trait. Just thinking that you don't deserve anything, not good enough for anyone else.
Yeah.
I see this so often.
What about your story?
Yeah, I'm definitely always have been more of the anxiously attached side of things. I have, more of that inconsistent early childhood life. My mum's always been pretty great, but my dad was like actually really good when I was very little. But over time and like as I kind of grew like more into childhood, he like was drinking a lot and there was some like family violence, partner violence, all of that kind of stuff that was really unstable in my house and I didn't know what side of him I was going to get a lot of the time. So it was like literally tiptoeing around and my mum was usually pretty comforting and would make sure we were okay. But then sometimes when she was totally at the end of her rope, she would break down or like scream at us or like not ever anything. Like, I love my mum, not a bad word to say about her. But you know, when you're just losing it and you just,
and they're
like,
also doing the best they can. Yeah. And I think you don't realize that about your mum until you get older.
Oh my God.
And you realize like, how did you do that? Like, I look at my mum and I'm like, how the fuck did you work two jobs to raise two girls by yourself? We never went without anything. That's why she sacrificed her whole life basically for us so that we could do dancing and horse riding and go to nice schools. And like, she sacrificed so much of her life for us.
Mm.
And you're like, God, you are just an angel.
Yeah, I have so much more respect for my mum now, and I curse those days when I was like 15, 16, same. That I was like, I hate you, you're ruining my life, because she wouldn't let me like sleep at a random boy's house.
I know.
Thank God.
I know.
But like, yeah, so that was very much my background. Like, I don't like to talk about it too much because A, I don't like to just shit on my family because it's not my thing, and like I'm very much past it, I've processed it. But I guess like it just gives a little context and probably resonates with a lot of people, and like I definitely have like classic daddy issues in that way, and that is my history. But I think it didn't affect me as much earlier on. Like I was not really showing a lot of these traits in like high school or anything like
that. Neither, which was interesting. Sorry to cut you off again, but like my sister had a lot of anxiety when she was a lot younger.
Yeah.
But then she grew up, and maybe it's because she treated her anxiety when she was quite young and kind of dealt with it head on. And then she ended up in a very, very, very secure relationship. And they've been together for like 9 years or something. They're engaged. They're like, whatever. And that surprised me that she was so stable and so secure at such an early age. Yeah. Like she was like 20 when she met him.
Wow.
And that I was 29 when I finally met someone good.
Yeah.
And I was like, how? We were raised in the same home. We had the same experiences.
Sometimes it's just like being in the right place at the right time. But yeah, like that can definitely happen. Whereas I was kind of the reverse. I don't feel like it affected me as much as like a teenager. I was just like, it is what it is. My parents separated when I was in like grade 12. But my mom was always really there for me, made sure I was okay, kind of protected us from any, you know, when my dad was in a really bad mood and stuff, she kind of like would take us out of the house. So we didn't really, as much as we walked on eggshells around dad, like we knew if we needed anything, we could go to mom and it was always fine. But I had a really traumatic relationship, like my first serious boyfriend, which I think I met him when I was like 19. We were together for 3 years, I think. He was abusive, like physically, and would cheat on me all the time, gaslight me, like absolutely the works. And I didn't know any better because it was my first relationship.
Yeah.
And I should have. I mean, I was an adult, but you know, you don't really pick up on these things because he fully love bombed me in the start and was like this great guy.
And we as had, you like, said, what do you have to compare it to?
Yeah. And I just was like stuck. But then he would just convince me that I was just imagining things and literally like, what are you talking about? I didn't even do that to you. Like fully just made me think I was crazy. And he was exactly like my dad. So it was like a almost like comforting familiarity in a way.
You're like, even this is awful. Normal male behavior.
Yeah. Well, I didn't have a role model to tell me like, that's not how people, and I knew that people shouldn't act that way. But also it was really hard because I was almost trapped in that situation. It's a very long story, but you know, we're living together. I was on the lease and he was not, and he just wouldn't leave, wouldn't let me break up with him. And it was like a awful scary situation to be handling, like when I was, you know, 20 and 21 was like, was the worst of it, and I was like, I don't know what to do, I couldn't tell anyone. And that really put me in a bad way in terms of like fully textbook anxious attachment, like so paranoid for reason, because I had already lived through it. So I was like really tentative going into any other dating situations after that, because I was just like, I don't trust anyone. I'm like so desperately craving someone to just love me and treat me good. But then I don't know if anyone ever will. Like this boyfriend was just like, you're never going to find anyone better than me. And I just started to believe it. I was like, well, this is the best I'm going to get. And so like that was really difficult, but I kind of recognized that a little bit. I mean, I had no idea about attachment at that point, but I knew, okay, like I do deserve better. Like I got to a point that I was just like, I'm gonna be really careful. I stayed single for a few years. Then my next like serious, well actually I had a brief boyfriend in between that cheated on me again. Here we go. I'm just gonna tell you guys my life story. So I was like, great, I'd done all this work, I was feeling really good, and I just got cheated again and dumped by text and all the fucking works on that one. And then the next boyfriend that I had was really great. And so it was like, I was just really lucky that I picked myself back up. I worked on myself again, tried to get my confidence back up, ended up with a guy that was more securely attached, maybe very slightly on the anxious attachment side for him, but he had great parents, really good family life. He was really stable as a person.
And so he gave you exactly what you needed at that point in your life.
Yeah.
Like exactly.
I would say he was like 90% secure or 80% secure, 20% anxious, only in that he was like super duper affectionate, which I loved, and then eventually was like, okay, chill.
Yeah.
Because I was like, okay, my needs are met now, I'm good.
Yeah.
But like, just made me feel so loved, and like, he was not going anywhere. And so I like developed a really healthy attachment, and that had really had like an on-flow effect into other areas of my life. I felt more confident. I just like had a whole new outlook on life, which was so great.
And, yeah.
You know, then the next one fucked me up again.
Yeah. But so do you think you are?
I think I still got a little bit of work to do.
Because again, it's no secret for anyone who follows me on Instagram, you're back online dating. Mm-hmm. You're ready to get back on the
horse.
Very
new.
Very new. But obviously I think breakups do throw you.
Mm-hmm.
Like obviously when you are breaking up with someone, it's not, you know, something's gone wrong.
It's not a good time.
So I feel like, yeah, after breakups, that's when you can kind of sway into,
yeah,
onto a different end of the
spectrum.
Well,
it's a period of growth. And so, I mean, I've been working on myself for a while anyway, and really working on that just separately. But I think like since my last breakup, I've had like quite a turning point, which is really good for me.
And I don't feel like you're in a negative headspace. Like you're not like I was when you're like, I'm never going to find anyone. Like you are, you're pretty...
And you know the story of what happened with this last breakup.
Yeah.
And I should not be doing as well as I am.
But that's what I mean. Yeah. Like, based on, oh God, what would it would have been? Like, you weren't in a very good way probably a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And I feel like you knew.
Mm-hmm.
You knew
mm-hmm.
that, what's that saying? The writing was on the wall.
Yeah.
Is that what they say? Like, you knew the situation. Yeah. And I feel like I have been in that situation before where... You know, you always have a gut feeling and you always know, but you just don't want to say it out loud.
When you're actually attached, you're hypervigilant.
Yeah.
But then you think, am I just being paranoid because this has happened to me before? Am I just reading into things?
Yeah.
Is it that their energy has shifted and they are inconsistent, or am I just having an off day? Is it they didn't put an emoji at the end of their text? Like, do they hate me? Like, I know that there's things that you just doubt yourself so much and think, no, this is just my old trauma. Like, I'm good now. I'm fine. This is not anything to worry about. They tell you there's nothing to worry about. There was things to worry about.
100%.
And, like, it just annoys me that I stuck around for so long. Yeah. Like, it actually really irks me because I'm like, I am better than that. I don't know what the fuck was going on in my head.
But it's okay. It was what you needed at the time.
Yeah.
Do everything.
Oh, look, it worked out for the best for me, and that always happens. I think I have this very like trust in the universe vibe these days, because it's like every time something really bad happens to me, something really great comes out of it every time. Like I'm just like that little phoenix rising from the ashes.
Yeah.
Literally every time. Like, I would not have this house
if
it wasn't for that.
Exactly.
I wouldn't be in the headspace I'm in. Like, there's so much good that's come out of like where the random twists and turns have gone in my life. But anyway, that's my story. So
but
basically,
what you just said, what you just said earlier actually gave me really good insight into, I think you and I are very empathetic people, and we are hypervigilant about other people's behaviors towards us. So I definitely am. And I want to talk about this now quickly, is not just in your romantic relationships, but from a friendship and like even a work perspective. Mm-hmm. If my friend, if I send her, for example, like, well, just one of them, for example, if I send her like funny memes or a message and she writes back something short because she might be busy, I'll be like, oh my God, she's mad at me. What have I done? Like, oh my God, I've got to repair the relationship. What have I done?
That's
but
so
I
classic.
Won't say anything. I'll probably just like bomb her with texts until like eventually she has time to reply. And I'm like, oh cool. Like that was all good. And same with work. Like if my boss sends me, or someone at work sends me an email that might be a little bit short or written in a tone that I construe as maybe a little bit off or different, I'll be like, great, I'm getting fired, like get on seek.com quick, like I'm gone, I'm so gone. And I am like that with everyone, even my mom. Like if she sends me a message without emojis, I'm like, oh my God, I pissed her off. Like what? I am so hyper vigilant about other people's, I'm so spongy, it makes me sick. And I am so affected by other people's energies.
Yeah, you notice the inconsistency.
Yes.
Because it's the inconsistency that made you like this.
Yeah.
Essentially. And so you pick up those fluctuations because you're like fearful of the bad times that people have responded to you or not being there for you, but hoping that it's the good times. So it's like, okay, you text someone, you expect them to respond in a certain way because most of the time they do, but then on the time that they don't, it's like, oh my God, why? And it's literally, they're just texting while they're cooking dinner or something.
Yeah.
They just forgot to press a heart emoji and it's like,
yeah,
chill. Like,
yeah.
But yeah, that's so, so common. So that's what I mean. Like, it doesn't just show up in relationships. It shows up in friendships, family interactions, colleagues at work. Like, do you want me to talk you through like maybe some of like the work ones?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, so specifically,
I think that's where
work,
a lot of people would struggle,
even school. So like just any kind of situation like that. So secure people, I guess, like less likely to be involved in drama. They're usually pretty like focused, they're pretty confident with their skills, like they know they're either good at their job or like pretty good at school. If they need help, they'll ask for it. So pretty normal. If you are anxiously attached, which is us, usually more stressed. And when we say anxiously attached, it doesn't automatically mean like anxiety disorder.
No.
There's a very common correlation though, but it's not like a 100% thing. But yeah, usually like feeling a lot of pressure around like doing really well, questioning like, am I working hard enough? Do people see me working hard enough? Like that really people pleaser side of things.
I feel so seen right now.
Like needing reassurance as well on decision making is a huge one for me that I still struggle with. Is like I get massive like, yeah, I'm like, oh my God, I don't know if this is the right thing. And sometimes I need someone to just say, yeah, go with that one. Like mm-hmm. I just need that kind of validation. And like needing a lot of just feedback on your work. Like, did I do a good job? Like I need to hear my boss say you did a good job, or hear the teacher say like, well done, or see the A+ or whatever it is, to really feel like you did a good job. Cause until you get that validation back, you're like, is it good or is it not good? I'm unsure. I'm doubting myself.
I literally feel like I have a performance evaluation next week. And I literally think one of the questions that we have to fill out is how can I explain to my boss, or like what piece of advice can I give to my boss to help her like deal with me?
Right.
I really want to write down now, like I'm anxiously attached and from a work perspective, this is how it shows up and this is how you need to deal with me. So like if I do a good job, I don't want you to come and pat me on the back every 10 minutes and be like, great job, great job, great job. But like, I do need to know that. You are happy with the work that I'm doing, and I do put a lot of pressure on myself as well to achieve very highly and to achieve a lot of things at the same time.
Yeah, because you have that need for validation, so you're just like pushing to be the best, but you still think you're not good enough, so you push harder. So then
what's it called? Imposter syndrome?
Yeah, it's really common to have that link. Not like a 100%, but really common that a lot of people who are anxiously attached have that, because they work so hard because they chase the validation.
Like we could do another whole episode 2 on imposter syndrome. Like I'm just making notes here.
I love it. This is just fascinating. But yeah, it's like you're striving for that. So then you work really hard because you want validation. So then you're more successful, but you still are not like fully confident in yourself. So then you're doubting. You're like, someone's going to find out. I'm like, shit at my job. I'm a total fraud here. I'm going to get fired.
Yeah.
So it's like this whole thing that just kind of plays over. It's wild. Wow. But like, I definitely see aspects of that. I think it shows up more for me in work than anywhere else.
Okay.
Personally.
That's good to know. Also, I feel like to an extent, having a little bit of anxiety around your work is probably a good thing. And if I didn't have that, I don't think I would perform as highly as I do, to be honest.
Motivating. Doesn't feel great.
No, but it feels awful.
Well, that's why you and I are so successful. Like if we didn't care about validation or like impressing other people, we'd probably just be like, eh, whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm just like, I love being seen as a hard worker. Yeah. I love doing really well. Like I chase that. I thrive off that. Yeah. So like it can be a useful thing. Mm. I guess like in work, school, for avoidant people, they tend like, especially in school, like maybe they didn't have like super close besties. Like they were kind of a lone wolf, or just would have really like surface level friendships. Work-wise, like, they don't tend to ask for help, don't want to be seen as needing help, will just kind of, like, they might even do something totally the long way just to kind of figure it out themselves and not have to show someone that they're struggling.
Mm.
And they don't really feel a need to fit in, like, if people go to work drinks without them and didn't invite them, like, they'd probably be like, yeah, whatever, don't really care.
That would destroy me.
Same.
That would destroy me.
Because we want to fit in. Yes. Yeah, I need that. And then, yeah, I guess like when we come back to that little rare, like disorganized one, they're kind of more likely to be like mean girl, a bully, like act in really not great ways. They don't really make like strong connections with people. They push a lot of boundaries and sometimes will self-sabotage. So they'll just like blow their own shit up.
Yeah.
Not a great one.
Yeah.
We kind of covered like friendships and relationships anyway. They're kind of pretty interchangeable. Maybe we can talk about like conflict resolution.
Oh yeah.
Does that show up for you in like, well, yeah, you said you shut down in fights. So yeah, exactly the same thing. Like in terms of like times of crisis. So it could be either conflict with someone else or a stressful situation with yourself. So
This is kind of like playing into the flight or fight thing. Like people absolutely. Have very different ways of handling highly stressful or scary situations.
Mm-hmm. So secure people generally can handle their emotions a little better. They've learned to self-soothe over time. So even if they're feeling really stressed, they might already have like a toolbox of coping mechanisms that they can go to. They know their little breathing techniques, or they're just like, I'll be fine. Like, I'm feeling pretty assured.
Yeah.
But like if they need support, they feel really comfortable reaching out to someone and saying, hey, I'm having a hard time. Can you help me? And they trust that they're going to get the support that they need.
Yeah.
So, you know, in fighting, usually people who are securely attached, if it's like a secure relationship, things don't tend to escalate as much into like fighting.
Because they can just literally chat and have like a civilized conversation where they both articulate their points, what's worrying them, and then they move on with their life.
It's like, hey,
wouldn't that be nice?
Hey, I didn't like this thing that you did. I'm not too nervous to tell you about it because I know you're going to take it well. Can we chat? This other person will be like, cool, I'm really sorry I did that thing I did. Wow. I'm really sorry I hurt you.
I wonder what that
How can like. We not do that in future?
Yep.
And it's like, okay, cool, thumbs up, move on. You know, like it's generally less drama.
Yeah.
Not always, but, you know, for the most part, they handle conflict pretty well.
Yeah.
When we look at us, a lot of, obviously, need for reassurance again. So, especially, I think the biggest way that this has shown up for me in the past is the, if there's a fight, and this happened a lot with my last partner, he would very much shut down and just leave me hanging, wouldn't finish the conversation. Like, if I was physically there, he would just, like, go in another room. If it was, like, I was at my place and he was at his, he would stop texting. Just fully shut down and like not continue. I was always chasing like the resolution, and I would just like bombard and keep going, be like, we need to finish this, we need to fix it, like talk to me, and it would like drive me insane.
Would that be your secure part of you though, wanting the resolution?
Partly, yeah, but I think the chasing of it and the stress that it put me was under to leave it under. Whereas like if I was maybe more secure, I'd be like, okay, I could probably just give him space.
Yeah.
Chill out and we'll talk about it tomorrow.
Yeah.
Whereas it was like triggering for me because then I was really scared that it was like, oh my God, is this going to be a breakup or a massive fight or what's going on? Like, bless you.
Bless me. Because I feel like Damon's almost like that. When I shut down, I feel like it makes him a little bit insecure that he's done something.
Yeah.
That has upset or annoyed me. Also, I am just a highly sensitive and emotional person anyway. But I feel like, yeah, we probably need to work a little bit on like our, we don't fight a lot, like very rarely.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, as you do when you live with someone and you hang out with them a lot, you just get into like stressful situations or like you don't agree about something or but my classic go-to is like, I'll just zip my lips and just like look somewhere else, and he knows, and it really upsets him that I can't articulate how I'm feeling, but I've never once stopped to consider why it would make him so upset.
Yeah.
But if I had said something to someone and they just shut down and went silent and looked away, I would be so upset.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm really sorry, Damon, if you're listening. I know you're not, but I'm really sorry.
But it's good to reflect on like, the negative parts of yourself that you want to improve on.
Yeah.
Like even in that situation that I just described where I was like, he was kind of being a dick and leaving me hanging there. But I also need to respect that maybe some people need more space and I should respect their boundaries. Whereas I, in the moment, really used to struggle to see it that way. But now, hindsight, I'm like, I could probably chill. Still not okay how that was playing out. But like in terms of other situations, it's like maybe I could also learn to just self-soothe a little more.
Yeah.
So I'm working on that. So yeah, they're kind of the main ones, I guess, with conflict. Like if we take it back to our little rare disorganized, it's generally pretty explosive. They don't handle things in a very positive, healthy ways.
No.
So yeah, like I mentioned, can sometimes be like alcoholism, drug abuse. Like they don't know how to deal with any kind of stress a lot of the time. So it can be quite intense.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they're kind of like the main ways, I guess, that it shows up aside from like the relationships. One thing that I find really interesting that I've looked into recently, just like off the back of some of the counseling sessions I've had, is like the interaction between like pairings of different attachment styles and stuff.
Yeah.
So like obviously secure, if there's two secure people, it's like what we see like couple goals, right?
Yeah.
It's like super comfortable, like goals. Like
Marshall. Can I just ask you though, like do you actually know securely, like two securely attached people?
Yeah. But no one that I know that I would say does not have a single either anxious or avoidant trait. Like, they're normal personality traits. Like, people fluctuate. No one's, like, 100% never you know, jealous or anything like that. You can still be relatively securely attached and have those kind of thoughts here and there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like I know a couple of couples who just communicate really well, support each other, root for each other. Like it's so foreign to me a lot of the time. So I've really only had like one relationship like that. But I guess, I guess that one was really pretty secure. Normal. Like even though I still had a few anxious traits, it was like resolved really easily when I knew that he wasn't going anywhere. And so that was like the happiest relationship really I've ever had. Just, we were just two different people, which is unfortunate. Like I changed a lot, you know, with my life in that time. But like that was kind of a pretty good example of that, I suppose.
Yeah.
But yeah, like secure and insecure, great. Anxious and insecure is, I guess, where the secure person needs to be pretty secure, that they feel like they can help the anxious person, you know, because it does take a little bit more work, but it's like, if they love you, they will do it. Like Damon, like he doesn't even question it. He's just like, what do you need? Let me comfort you.
Yeah.
And it's not an issue to them. You know, the anxious person will feel like it is. And I guess it's just also having that anxious person recognize that pattern and say, hey, I'm having this thought that I'm feeling really jealous right now. I know it could be irrational. Can we talk about it? Yeah. And it's having the like confidence to say that, knowing you're not going to push them away, where it's usually that fear of pushing them away that stops you from saying it. Then you get in your head, then they don't have the opportunity to actually reassure you.
Mm-hmm.
Or you wait until you've like bottled it up for so long and then you're screaming at them that you think that they're cheating on you. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, so like that pairing like can be helpful as long as the anxious person knows that they've got stuff that they need to work on and can communicate that to say, hey, I've got this need and I kind of need your help with it.
Yeah.
And maybe do some of your own work as well.
Yeah.
Go to therapy.
100%.
I'm a big advocate of everyone going to therapy.
I think everyone should too.
I have therapists have therapists. I want to get to the top therapist. If every psychologist and counselor has one that they see, like who is the top person? Yeah. What are they like? Tell me
that's
about that.
So true.
There's got to be one that's just like, I'm the one.
That's so true. I'm the top. Like the little queen bee sitting on her perch. I also think that Damon is so good at soothing me and my anxious attachment because he has so many anxious friends. Like so many friends who, have an anxious attachment style as well. So to him, he's like, I know how to handle you because I've seen this in XYZ who I hang out with all of the time before, which was really helpful for me.
Also, secure people have developed their own coping mechanisms over time. So they can be like, well, hey, when I'm really stressed, I do this. Will that help you? Or like, chill out. Let's just breathe. Like, calm down. You're okay. Like, so it can actually be really helpful, but again, like, let's not rely on your partner to fix you.
No,
I think it's like so important to just do your own work. But I think like if you can learn to express yourself in that particular pairing, that's where like some of the magic can really happen in them being there for you and you seeing they're consistently there for me. I don't need to be walking on eggshells all the time. Avoidant with a secure, that one can be a little trickier because the secure person is pretty confident in themselves. Like they know what they deserve and they don't tolerate a lot of the shit that an avoidant person would do in terms of pulling away. Like they might be like, hey, I can recognize that this person maybe is pulling away for a reason. Like they're pretty self-aware, secure people. Be like, oh, maybe you didn't have a great childhood or such and such happened with a previous relationship. I know why you're pulling away. Let me talk to you.
Yeah.
They'll try to a certain point. Let me help you. Do you want to talk about it? If, again, the avoidant person recognizes those behaviors in themselves and is willing to work on it and learn to open up and let that wall down, then that secure person can kind of say, yeah, hey, I am here for you. If you tell me about it, I'm not going to run away. Nothing bad's going to happen. If you have a feeling, let's go through it. And so that can improve. But if the avoidant person is really rigid on like either just totally not even accepting that that's what it is and they would just rather be this way, they don't want to have feelings and acknowledge them, eventually that's going to push the secure person away because they're going to be like, dude, I deserve better than this. I have needs and I want affection. And if you're going to run away from me, see you later.
Yeah, for sure. You know? So just to a certain degree, you have to be very self-aware at the same time.
Yeah.
You can't just know what your attachment style is and accept it. You have to understand that your attachment traits, like what impact they're having on someone else, whether it be your boyfriend, your boss, your friends, your parents.
Yeah, it's like knowing what type you are, how it mainly shows up for you, why you're like this, which is generally the bigger thing, because it's like, what's the childhood trauma,
and that's relationship breakdowns. See someone about
yeah,
it.
Like that's the part that you sometimes work need through. A little help with. A
little bit unpack. Yeah. Unpack a little bit.
Like if you can pinpoint like, okay, actually that was pretty awful and I maybe haven't gotten over that as well as I thought, that's kind of where that really opens up. And then it's working on yourself in terms of like confidence or whatever it is that you're really lacking in that point.
Yeah.
The worst pairing, I guess, would be that anxious with avoidant.
Yeah.
But that's also really typically common, because taking it back to that like confirmation bias where you, that's just kind of what you expect and you always attract that person. Mm-hmm. So frustrating. And it's this massive push and pull on either side of that spectrum where you're both so far over the other side of secure that you're triggering each other, essentially. Mm-hmm. The avoidant person is like, fuck, this person's so emotional. They need so much from me. I can't give them that. I don't even know how to comfort them. Like, this freaks me out. Back off. And so they step away. So then the avoidant person's like, oh my God, they're running away. They're going to leave me. I'm going to chase them more. And it's literally like this tug of war situation.
That is so triggering to hear you say that, because I was in one of those for years and years and years. And I knew how bad it was. But like you said, it's like that 6-6 cycle.
Yeah.
That when you, cause I was the anxious in that situation and he was the avoidant, that when I guess he saw me being like, fuck this shit, I'm out.
Yeah.
He would come back and say all the right things. And then I'd be like, oh, okay, cool. I'm not going to go anywhere. I'm going to stay, because I believe when you say that you just need a little bit of time, that's cool.
Yeah.
You still love me. Like, and then that's it's cool.
That inconsistency again that you're used to, and the good parts keep you holding on. And that's the thing. From the sounds of it, you'd be like, well, why would anyone stay in that? Like, that sounds like it's so clearly dysfunctional. And absolutely it is.
And from the outside, it 100% totally. Is. And your friends are like, Phoebe, wake the fuck up to yourself. And you're like, you don't understand.
Yeah, but he said this one nice thing, or he bought me this birthday present, or like he was really here for me this one time, but also he left me crying in the corner 25 other times. But the thing is, while it's from the outside very visibly not a good match, when you're in it, the trouble is a lot of the time the anxious person will just roll over and be a doormat because they don't want to lose the avoidant partner. So then they will just really not ever get their needs met. They'll struggle to communicate. They'll kind of then almost retreat and lose a part of themselves.
Oh God, I remember how scary it was sometimes to even like make a phone call. Like,
really?
Hey, haven't heard from you in a fucking week.
Wow.
Or like, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, it makes me sick. Yeah. And then you're like, oh my God,
am
it.
I being so needy again? Yeah. It's like, no, you should be able to call
You're not even meeting like my basic,
yeah.
basic needs as a human, yeah. let alone a partner.
Absolutely. But because an avoidant partner will likely push you away in that way and say, you're too needy. You need too much. It's like, well, no, it's not needy to have needs. Like, it's a basic human necessity. But it's more likely in those particular dynamics for the anxious person to just completely be a people pleaser, go along with what the avoidant person says, even if they know it's like deep down, they're like, this doesn't feel right, but I don't want to lose this person anyway because of the occasional good times. So I'm just going to work on what do they want? What's their timeline? If they don't want to commit or they don't want to move in together or anything like that, I'll wait. I'll give them space. I'm being so great about boundaries.
Next minute, you've been waiting for 4 years.
Yeah, exactly.
You've missed a lot of good ones because you were waiting for a dud.
Yeah.
Also, if anyone's watched Sex Life, I feel like that is the exact dynamic that they deal with on Sex Life.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. So the last two pairings, I guess, would be two anxious people together. Sometimes can be okay if they're not very anxiously attached, if they're just mildly. Sometimes both having those same needs, understanding each other can be helpful and can actually grow into a little bit more secure.
Yeah.
It just really depends on, I guess, the severity and how that like shows up. And it also can be a situation of like massive codependency.
Yes.
So that's where you have to be careful, because in order to be more securely attached, you have to also work on your independence.
Yeah.
And be okay with doing things separately, trusting that your partner's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's still going to need some work. If it's not super toxically anxiously attached, it can be okay, but it's probably not the greatest pairing.
Okay, that also makes me feel really good about myself, because I feel like despite being anxiously attached, Damon and I very much still have our own lives.
Yeah,
and
it's so important.
I will constantly be going out with the girls, and he will constantly be going out with his friends, and neither of us ever worry about what the other one's doing.
See,
and I'm not going to get upset if he goes, you know, like, today I'm here all afternoon. Tomorrow I've got a girl's lunch and I'm seeing a friend for coffee in the morning and probably another friend for coffee in the afternoon.
not an issue.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
it's so important to just make
sure. Maintaining your own life as
yeah,
well.
Yeah. It's the trust in that you can do that. You don't need to check up on them.
Whereas
all the time.
It makes sense when you say two anxious people would probably not plan many things outside of doing it with
yeah,
each other.
They just want each other all the time because they're like, oh my God, you're giving me the affection. Now I just want this around me all the time, which
yeah.
is like fine. Like if you want to be like that, like that's fine. But I think it's really important to have that kind of separate interests, be okay with each other, be trusting that if you
mm-hmm.
do, one of you goes away for the week that you're not going to be, you know, cheated on or anything like that. So it's
yeah.
really kind of working on that together is fine. Like it's possible. I think the least likely pairing to actually work out would be two avoidant people.
Oh, who would even make the, who would start the communication?
Yeah, no one would make an effort. No one would be trying to build an intimate connection. So even if it was, oh, we both don't really have many needs, but we're actually cool because it's like a pretty casual relationship. Like, yeah, we're dating, we're together, but like, it's not super needy, doesn't matter if we don't get married, we're both cool with it. Like, it sounds like it's real chill, but it's always going to be super surface level and it's always going to feel not quite right because ultimately everyone does want intimacy and, like, affection. So it's like, oh, I'm kind of getting my needs met, I think, but also, like, something still feels off. Like, I don't...
So do you think in that respect, like, you... I had assumed that,
mm-hmm.
obviously I'm referring to the one I dated who was avoidant.
Mm-hmm.
I had just assumed that he was never ready for a girlfriend, never wanted a girlfriend.
Yeah.
And then boom, shakalak, he got a girlfriend. But do you think that it was just a different type of attachment?
Potentially.
That was together?
I mean, you know, people like other people for different reasons, not anything as a reflection on that you're not good enough.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, sometimes the specific dynamic just works better and that's like not anything as a flaw on your part, but it's just a match thing. You know, some people just match better than others. People like that kind of dynamic and that's life, pal. You just got to be in the right place at the right time.
And one day you will thank what happened to you.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Yeah.
We'll see how this bumbling goes. I'm only a few days in
yeah,
so
girl.
Far, but, you know, a promising
so far,
prospect.
So good.
Let's not put all our eggs in one basket.
We love that. Just probably stay away from Tinder. That's my only advice.
Yeah.
I said this in an episode a few weeks ago. My favorite online dating apps, and again, I'm digressing, but we're basically done now, were Hinge. I never got into Bumble, but I loved Hinge, so.
I've heard good things about Hinge, and everyone's like, oh, yeah, like the prompts. But Bumble has that now.
Oh, there you go.
I started that because I was like, one at a time is fine. I was swiping for like maybe an hour or two on the first night. I got like 15 matches.
And also you find that the same people have multiple different
probably.
Accounts. So you're seeing the same people just
yeah.
on a different platform.
Yeah.
Like, what's the point?
It's kind of nice though. Like, I've just been having some like really easy breezy conversations. I'm not expecting much because I actually am genuinely feeling like I'm in such a good place that I'm like, it's cool. I've got stuff going on. If someone great lands in my lap, cool. Like, I'm in a good place that I welcome it and I know I deserve it, but I'm not going to be like hunting for it because I've
yeah.
got better things to do with my life. But, you know, we'll just wait and see.
I love that.
I'm like throwing certain things out there in conversations to see how they respond to certain things, not in a testing way, but I'm just like setting a boundary and seeing if they respect that. And,
I
you know, looking
that.
For certain things that I'm like, okay, these are things that when I entered my last relationship, I didn't have the knowledge of.
No.
That was like 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know about any of this stuff. And now I'm like, I'm going to use all these skills.
Oh my God, that's so smart.
Yeah, so I'm like asking certain questions.
So you're already starting
you know,
in a much better place.
I know, it's great. I'm like, oh, this is going to be such a more successful dating experience, I hope. We'll see. I'll keep you posted.
Love that price.
Next minute married. Just kidding.
Oh my God. Well...
Cheers.
Cheers.
That was a
I
good
feel
time.
Smarter already.
Oh, yay. I hope
and
that
we're
going
to have to welcome you back for part B, which will be love languages, which
yeah.
I could literally go on about 4 days.
Do you know what I've done a little bit with my clients is using the love languages for yourself to use it as a self-care activity.
Oh.
And like, actually, what does that translate to? What does that look like? Like, if you love words of affirmation, here's a list of ways that you can actually show yourself self-care with words of affirmation. So it could be little pep talks and coping statements. It could be reading self-development books or like screenshotting quotes. Like, it's so great. We can cover it. Don't worry.
Well, okay. Here's a little teaser then for the next episode.
Yeah.
My love language is physical touch. How do I apply that to myself? I think I already know the answer.
Definitely.
Boom.